In these last 2 weeks, they have struck two blows at the West. Tremendous sledgehammer blows. Military, one is military and one is political. The military blow is obvious. They have caught us with the great bulk, not only of our forces, but of Western land forces bogged down in Asia, in Korea and Indochina, for the most part, leaving Europe not only denuded, but with no hope of being otherwise for quite a long time to come, and with the added chance that the West might commit even greater forces in Asia. And the political blow is designed, I think, at least the effect so far would indicate that, is designed simply to split apart this Western alliance. And I think the chances are pretty serious that that can happen. I think so because of developments this last week in Europe and because of what has gone on, the positions revealed in the Truman-Attlee conference in Washington. Most of the governments, I suppose all of them, of the Western Alliance, North Atlantic Treaty in Europe, the governments themselves have reacted pretty well on the question of their own defense in Europe. I am told that among great sections of the population, particularly in France and Italy, for example, and Germany too, the balloon has started to go up. I'm told that over in Paris this last week, there has really been a spirit of downright fear among a good many groups of people, many intellectuals, journalists, and politicians, so on, and that the communists have taken advantage of it to roll the snowball along by letting out word that so-and-so is on the list of the 750 to be shot the first day and so on. And a lot of people have started to duck for cover. And the Truman-Attlee meeting here this week, which I think I have a pretty close grasp on the essentials of what happened, has raised the whole problem, the whole danger, not the conference itself, but what it has revealed, of this country not only falling into a military trap in Asia, which is certainly has done, at least temporarily, but into a diplomatic one, political one, too, for this reason. That the President and the Secretary of State, on the one hand, have taken the position, first of all, they don't know how we're going to get out of Korea. I mean, they haven't discussed that very far, quite as long as they can, certainly. The first directive to MacArthur is to save the army, which is natural. I mean, they don't know how to solve it in the sense they don't know whether they're going to get any negotiations with the Chinese or what possible terms they could be or what's to be done with Korea afterward. But the President, I think rather instinctively, an instinctive reaction that rather reflects the state of mind of a great many Americans, and Acheson for, I suppose, not only reasons of desire to save political unity in the country, but because it would be a kind of a natural moral reaction to Acheson, who is a highly moral and a deeply religious man. They have taken the position that the Chinese cannot get by with this, whether there's a peace settlement in Korea or we're driven out, that somehow they must be punished. That not to do so is to reward the blackmail of aggression. UN would be really rewarding it instead of trying to put it down or punish it, that would really destroy the whole substance of the UN if they get by with this. And a proposal has been made that whatever happens now in Korea, we shall carry on what is called a limited or partial warfare against China. It could take many forms. I presume the main one would be naval and air blockade, maybe with some bombing connected with it. We have agreed that we would not, this has been the agreement ever since the war ended of our chiefs of staff, despite what MacArthur may think about it, and we don't know what he thinks about it, that we shall not get involved in a land war with China or in the mainland of Asia itself anywhere. And so this has come out of these conferences as a kind of a compromise idea that might not sink all our forces in that great swamp and still uphold this principle. Well, the British say absolutely no. They say this is a profound mistake if you do this. We want to have no part of it. And the cynical reaction to that of some Americans, of course, is immediately that, well, they don't want to, that would cut off all their trade with China, and they would lose Hong Kong, which they would certainly do. But that is underrating the British, I think, a good deal. They have much, I think, deeper reasons and a long experience, which tells them instinctively that this is a bum idea and a dangerous one. They do not believe, when this question, this phrase was first used of limited warfare, Attlee immediately said, is there such a thing? They simply do not believe that you can carry on a limited war, and I imagine they suspect the American people, above all, cannot do that without getting further involved. They think it holds the prospect of no solution at all, but only further involvement, of incident leading to incident. And they think that that would definitely destroy the UN, or threaten its foundations very severely, because they know, and they're, I think, quite right about it, that our major associates in the United Nations simply will not go along with that policy. If we do not do something of that sort, I don't know what will happen in this country, because I'm not sure what the great majority of public opinion about going in or getting out is. I'm not sure how much instinctive reaction to hit back at the Chinese in a serious way there may be. If it's very strong, and given the position of the Republican Party, particularly on this problem of Asia, if nothing is done, I'm not sure what would happen politically. I think there'd be quite an upheaval. The president might, in a sense, become really isolated from Congress. There might be such a splitting of what political unity we have in the country now on foreign affairs, which isn't very much, that neither he or any other Secretary of State could carry out any continuous policy. And if we do it, we run, I think, a very solemn risk of splitting the Western alliance itself. No government in Europe is going to go along with that, so far as I can determine, in any degree at all. We have really got ourselves in a box. I would put it this way, to try to sum this up, this position, that up to now, in these last few years, our trouble, our big trouble has been that our diplomatic commitments had outrun our military strength. And now, in a certain real sense, the trouble is that our moral principles have outrun our diplomatic strength. I think that's a reasonably fair way to put it. Now, I don't know exactly what the alternatives are that lie just ahead. At best, ideally, really, we do keep out of China. We do have time to arm Europe. And Europe shows courage enough to do it. And we do get some kind of a balance of power. Or we get sucked into the mainland of Asia, and the countries of Europe thereby make their own peace one by one with Russia, and we are left isolated. Or it may work out that we will pour more and more into Europe, but before it can be effective, Russia will strike, take it all, and we are still isolated and at war under great disadvantage. Time and chance is really by no means as much with us as we have tried to believe these last few years. I really think war may be upon us very soon. And I suppose the only reason that the Russians hold off now, and they have everything, they can take everything in one sweep, I suppose is the fact of our stockpile of atomic bombs. Maybe they want to try to equalize that some way. But I'm afraid the water's really gone over the dam. Maybe tomorrow morning I'll feel better. Depends on how I sleep, but this is like this now. I think our prospect, even if war is held off now for some time, as long as we can see ahead, I think that in terms of our life here as Americans at home, the prospect is a pretty, not a grim one, depending on our courage and our spirit, but a pretty serious one. It's going to be a different kind of life. I think very different. And with respect to that, I want to read a few words that were spoken by General Bradley on a broadcast with me the day that he went out to Wake Island this fall. We had sat down together a couple of times ahead of this and tried to think out and phrase what we thought the proper words were people should have be told in this particular moment of our particular moment of events. And in any case, these are other words that General Bradley used, and I'd like to read them to you and close. He said, "We have had a unique history among modern peoples. Our country itself has never been in physical danger. We have grown and prospered marvelously. We have licked our internal problems, usually with great dispatch. We have always looked ahead and never backward. This story has fascinated all the world and has developed almost in our bones a feeling that there is a special magic about being American. Sometimes we have behaved as though freedom was a gift to us, a special prize given a man for his distinguished achievement in having been born an American. We have had a kind of feeling in our bones that Providence had some special interest in the survival of Americans. And now we're beginning to understand, as we understood in the early days of this country, that the survival of Americans is not a permanent gift. The survival of America is something that will be earned by our own efforts. A man has to understand now that his duties will not be limited to writing a few checks or serving a few weeks on a civil defense committee. Higher taxes won't solve this crisis. More weapons and gadgets won't solve it. A vote for this candidate or that candidate won't solve it. All those things a good citizen must do, but that is just the beginning. Every man and woman in America, said the general, must reestimate now his whole attitude towards his country and his own plans for his future. He must re-examine the purpose of his life and realize that his personal interests no longer come first. Let us get it clear in our minds, said Bradley. America has now entered an era of life which has long been familiar to older nations. Other people have lived in and out of the shadow of physical destruction for centuries. Now America, as the world rapidly shrinks, is entering a life of light and shadow, in which tension and sacrifice will be the normal way of life. We can adjust to it, and we will, because we have to. But it will take a patience such as Americans have never had to exercise. We have been taught to believe that all problems can be quickly solved with a vote and a check and a piece of legislation. But that is not the nature of life anywhere. The problems may be with us for many, many years. The task is to see that fact clearly, to live with it patiently, to work at the problems tirelessly. That, he said, is not the carefree life many Americans have known, but it will be our life for the years ahead. And if we live it right, and only if we live it right, maybe our children can live a better one. Thank you very much.